Hey, Scott and Troy from Who Cares About Men's Health. We're taking a little bit of a break. We will be back with new episodes soon. In the meantime, we are playing back some of our favorite and most impactful episodes. And I think this one really resonates with Troy more than me. I've been blessed that normally I don't have difficulty sleeping, but that's not the case for Troy.
You're so fortunate, Scott. You know, if I had to just pick one episode from everything we've ever recorded and said, this is my favorite, this is the one I would pick. And it's for exactly those reasons. A lot of things in here really resonated with me. I've tried to incorporate them. If you struggle with sleep, this is a great episode going through several tips, the four rules of rest, things that could potentially change the way you sleep and the way you approach sleep.
All right. Our sleep expert, Kelly Barron, gives us a lot of great advice in this episode right here.
Oh, you know, when I want to get things done and go eat,
Scott is hungry.
I can be the most focused person ever.
Fighting the misconception that men don't care about their health. This is Who Cares About Men's Health, providing information, inspiration, and motivation to engage in your health. My name is Scott Singpill. I'm the manager of thescoperadio.com, and I care about men's health.
And I'm Dr. Troy Madsen. I'm an emergency physician at the University of Utah, and I care about men's health.
I'm Kelly Glazer Barron. I'm a clinical psychologist and sleep specialist at University of Utah, and I care about men's health.
Kelly, thanks for being on the show. How are you doing today? How are you sleeping?
Pretty well. How about you?
Doing all right. We're going to talk about sleep because it is so important, but it can be easy for guys especially to just power through and neglect their sleep schedule. You know, you've heard the saying, sleep when I'm dead. And then almost denying yourself sleep can be manly and masculine, you know, if it's in sacrifice of other things. According to the study out of Harvard Medical School, 75% of people in the U.S. are getting less than 6 hours of sleep a night and experience sleep difficulties at least once a week. And at Who Cares About Men's Health, sleep is a major component of our core four. So, Dr. Barron, we wanted to call on your expertise to help solve the problem that 75% of men seem to be facing, and that is bad sleep habits. So the first thing I want to ask you about is, we talk about sleep being important, but maybe you could reiterate that. Why is sleep so important as far as our health is concerned?
Sleep is one of the most important things, important behaviors for both your mental and physical health. And there isn't one system in the body that isn't affected by sleeping poorly. You know, that includes emotional health like depression, things like reaction time and cognitive ability. So that affects your safety and driving and safety at work. And then also things like the functioning of the cardiovascular system, risk for diabetes, for weight gain. It's a basic process like breathing, eating, that sort of thing.
Yeah, you see the guys on the cover of those men's fitness magazines. We all think, well, we need to have great diet and great exercise to look like that, which, by the way, most of us guys will never look like that. But also you need to have great sleep as well, just reiterating how important sleep is. So how do you define a good night's sleep? First of all, how many hours generally do they say you should sleep to have a good night's sleep?
So the amount of sleep that's recommended by the National Sleep Foundation is between 7 and 9 hours of sleep per night. So when you hear 8 hours, it's not really that everyone needs to get 8 hours of sleep. In general, it seems that people need to be in bed to get at least 7 hours of sleep. In a recent consensus panel, you know, they said that at least 7 hours is really recommended for adults.
And that's crazy, Kelly, because you're saying, you know, 7 to 9 hours. And Scott, I think the statistic you read said 75% of people are getting less than 6 hours a night.
Yeah, according to Harvard Medical School study. Yep.
Yeah, that's you know, obviously a lot of us are suffering from significant sleep deficits. And like you said, Scott, I think for many of us, it really is sort of an ego thing, or, you know, we just don't consider it part of our health.
I think what happens too is that people get used to feeling tired all the time. And they've shown that over time, people's performance when they're sleep deprived continues to go down, but their perception of how sleep deprived they are stays the same. And so overall, people are just really terrible judges of how sleep deprived they are and how they perform under those conditions of sleep deprivation.
Yeah. And you mentioned the performance. That's really interesting. I remember seeing a study, and I'm sure you've seen it, that they tested people and they basically found that people's cognitive function, like their motor skills, are after 24 hours without sleep, or similar to someone who is legally intoxicated. Is that something you've seen supported elsewhere?
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, they've looked at a lot of different cognitive functions, and not all of them are affected by sleep, but it tends to be more of those attention and reaction time, abilities to switch tasks back and forth and react quickly. You know, it's not going to affect your general knowledge sort of type of cognitive functioning, but it's those sort of things that make a difference when you're you know, operating a vehicle or those sort of things.
So a good night's sleep is anywhere from 7 to 9 hours. Are there other ways that you define a good night's sleep as a sleep expert?
Yeah, it's not just about the hours, but it's also about the quality of sleep, about the continuity of sleep, about the quality of how you feel during the day. So good sleep is not just one thing. A framework that's been published by University of Pittsburgh, Dan Bicey's group there, they came up with this acronym called SATIT that has to do with satisfaction. Are you satisfied with your sleep? Alertness. Do you stay awake all day without dozing? Timing. They've defined timing as sleep. Good timing meaning, are you asleep between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m.? That your sleep period crosses those hours. The efficiency of sleep. Do you spend less than 30 minutes awake in the night? And then duration. And this one says, do you sleep between 6 and 8 hours per night?
Is this a test that's available for anybody to take to just kind of get an idea of if they're getting a good night's sleep?
Yes, it's available online.
Okay, great.
Yeah, and it seems like that's something that is a little more comprehensive than just saying, hey, I was in bed for 9 hours last night. And, you know, like you said, if you're tossing and turning and you're awake for 2 hours of that, and you're, that's interesting too, that they include that crossing the hours of 2 to 4 a.m. as a piece of that. But I like that it is a lot more comprehensive than just saying, yeah, well, I was in bed for 9 hours. I must be getting a good night's sleep, but I just don't feel well rested.
But there are people who sleep a decent amount of hours, but if you still feel fatigued during the day, and especially if you're having trouble staying awake without dozing off, there's something wrong there. That could be a sign that you're having sleep apnea or limb movements waking you up, or, you know, or something else happening that's affecting the quality of your sleep. It's not just the amount of sleep, but it's the quality of the sleep that you're getting.
Coming up in a couple of seconds, I want to talk about cognitive behavioral therapy. If somebody is having a difficult time sleeping, it's a tool that I understand sleep experts use. But what about people who say they do better on less sleep? Does that person really exist? You know, they're like, yeah, I only sleep 4 hours a night and I actually get more done. If I sleep 8 hours, I'm tired and slow. Like, is that really a thing?
Well, there are some case studies of, for example, some possible genetics that link some families that have this familial short sleep. But in general, the studies of short sleepers have not panned out. For example, in a study they did here at University of Utah that looked at short sleepers who said they felt fine, when they did fMRI scans, they fell asleep in the scanner. When they made them stop, they slept. Mm-hmm. Another study by Harvard, they had short sleepers spend more time in bed. They all slept longer and their performance went up. So I think the difference is how you respond to sleep loss. Some people are more robust in the face of sleep loss than others. Some people are people who can continue to push on and that feel okay, but it doesn't mean that they don't need more sleep. It just means that they handle it better than others.
Let's talk a little bit about somebody who doesn't feel like they're getting the quality of sleep that they need. Cognitive behavioral therapy, is that actually a good way to work on getting better sleep?
Cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, or CBTI, is the number one recommended treatment for chronic insomnia by the American College of Physicians. So it has a huge endorsement, as well as from American Psychological Association, et cetera. The use of cognitive behavioral therapy, I said for chronic insomnia, that means difficulty falling asleep, staying asleep, or waking up too early. If it's happening more than 3 times a week, and that's going on for more than 3 months, and it's causing a negative impact on your life or functioning, that's what we define as chronic insomnia.
Okay. And what are some of the tenets of CBTI?
CBTI is an abbreviated time-limited therapy. So it's typically around 4 to 6 sessions. And it involves a combination of changing cognitions or thoughts about sleep and then changing behaviors. And that's using techniques to help regulate your sleep better, learning how to relax and fall asleep at night. And I like to tell my patients, these are not rocket science, but when you put them together in a program, you can really see some substantial improvement in sleep. In fact, 75 or 80% of patients improve in their sleep. This includes improvement in people who have sleep problems along with other health problems like chronic pain or sleep apnea or depression or alcoholism, you know, other conditions that have sleep problems as part of them can even improve with these techniques.
That's great to hear. I was actually wondering that, you know, as you were talking, like, well, you know, it sounds like it's a great technique, but you're saying 75 to 80% of people actually do report significant improvement with this. And Sounds like it's also maybe even potentially translating into some of these other issues as well, maybe helping in other health issues or other things that have come up as a result of their lack of sleep.
It's a really wonderful treatment. That's one thing that led me to go into this field, is that a couple sessions and people are so happy. When you can finally sleep, you feel like life is better. And so I've worked in populations such as, you know, people who are undergoing cancer treatment or people who have some really severe developmental problems, and also, you know, people with schizophrenia, you know, some really severe problems, and they can still improve their sleep and feel better. And that is so important to improve someone's life.
That sounds incredible. Just after a couple sessions, people, I mean, how often does that happen, right? That a couple of sessions of anything shows significant improvement in somebody's life. So that's very cool. And you just look up a sleep expert, or like, who would I look for that would know how to do this with me?
Well, the biggest problem in CBTI is that there are only a couple hundred of us that are certified to do this type of treatment. So we're lucky at University of Utah. There's a couple of us here, myself and Dr. Chakowski at the Sleep Wake Center. We're bringing in a new postdoc to work with us next year who's going to expand our services. And then at IHE as well, there are people doing this treatment. So we're lucky to have a couple of us, but even there's like maybe four or five of us in the whole valley. You know, as a healthcare system, we have a couple different ways to go through this. But, you know, for other people, especially people in rural areas, it can be really challenging. There are some books. There's some insomnia workbook. There's CBTI apps that do offer this treatment. And they've interestingly shown that this treatment, even delivered through a digital platform, not having a therapist attached to it, can improve sleep significantly. It was shown to be not different than face-to-face CBTI in an equivalency trial, which is really cool.
That's interesting. So, but it sounds like the challenge here is just there aren't a lot of people certified like you are to help people out. So if you were to just give people, say, I don't know, would you feel comfortable giving people, say, three techniques, maybe things you talk about, things that they could try to improve their sleep?
So the group at Pittsburgh has titrated down CBTI to a version they called BBTI, Brief Behavioral Therapy for Insomnia. In that treatment, they had one session and one telephone follow-up, and this was conducted by a nurse practitioner. And what they taught people was, you know, they had them do a log of their sleep, and then they told people these four rules. They said, spend only the number of hours in bed that you sleep. So look at your log, how many hours you're sleeping, spend only those hours in bed. Number two, don't stay in bed unless you're sleeping. Three, don't go to bed if you're sleeping, unless you're feeling sleepy. And then the fourth rule is get up at the same time each morning. You know, so when I have people that are, for example, coming in from Montana, or, you know, they're not able to come every other week or even once a month, these are the things that we talk about, different ways to regulate your sleep. The reason that we do this is when people are having trouble sleeping, they feel tired all the time, but they're oftentimes getting into bed far too early. And so what we're trying to do is increase their hunger to sleep. It's this thing called sleep pressure. So when they do go to sleep, they're more tired. They're more hungry for sleep. And then by getting up at the same time each day, you're regulating your circadian rhythm or your body's clock.
So the challenge is going to be to kind of do that for the first few times, getting up super early in the morning and then not, you know, taking a nap in between then and bedtime, I would imagine.
I think that's definitely the challenge is most of the time we have people go to bed a little bit later. When people have insomnia, they get into bed earlier and earlier trying to get more sleep. And we actually say, forget about that. Wait till you're sleepy and then get up at the same time no matter what. And that's really hard. I mean, have you heard that? Don't stay in bed unless you're sleeping. Like, who wants to get out of bed in the middle of the night?
That to me is the hardest thing. And I know I've heard that before, that you shouldn't just lie in bed. But I feel like anytime I get up, then I'm like, well, I'm up and I'm not going to fall back asleep. But sounds like you're saying that's a better technique than what I typically do, which is just lie there and I just kind of lie there and just wait to fall asleep. And then sometimes I'm lying there for 2 hours.
All of these techniques will make your sleep feel worse before it feels better. And that's why it is better to do this as part of a program, because, you know, I look at their log and I'm saying you're on the right track or you're not on the right track. Here's what you need to do, because it actually feels worse to get out of bed. You're more tired. You would feel better if you laid there tossing and turning for a couple more hours, but that's not helping you break the pattern of insomnia.
That's actually great advice. Cause yeah, I think my approach has been to like try this stuff and I'm like, well, that didn't help, but just recognizing that it's going to be probably a few weeks of this before you really see the improvement.
I can't tell you how many patients have said, well, doctor, I've already tried that once. It didn't work.
Yep. There you go. You can add me to your list.
I like to tell them that, you know, it's like, you don't say like, here's one blood pressure pill. Did it work? You know?
No, you're exactly, you know, yeah. And I'm obviously a horrible patient and I recognize that, but you know, I'm kind of the type where I'm like, ah, I've got to have immediate results, but you're exactly right. If I'm telling someone, you know, weight loss program or blood sugar reduction or something like that, I don't want them to do something for 2 days and come back and say it didn't work. You've got to give it a month or two at least.
There are some times when it's worth laying there a little bit longer, trying to sleep. It's not that it has to be 100%. Let's say you have a big meeting the next day or that sort of thing. You know, this is really for chronic insomnia when somebody's in a pattern that they have this night after night. You know, I see this all the time. They come in, they're waking up at 3 a.m. In fact, this has even happened to me, waking up at 3 a.m. thinking about the next grant or that sort of thing. And it just becomes a habit. So what I do is I get up and I read The New Yorker. My dad gave me a subscription that came along with his. And they're these like wonderfully long, interesting, but not too interesting articles. It's really the perfect thing, in my opinion. Or I like podcasts too. So not to say that a podcast is boring, but it's, you know, it's kind of soothing.
So you're recommending that our podcast is potentially a cure for insomnia. That's kind of what I'm getting from this.
Possibly.
No, hey, not ours. You know, no, not this one.
It's all right. Nope. If that's how we help people's health, then we've done something good.
That's other guys' podcast, Troy, not this one.
Not this one. Okay.
Not this one. Good. Kelly, thank you so much for talking about sleep, the importance of sleep. If people are struggling with sleep, if they're able to seek out a professional, especially if they're suffering from chronic insomnia, CBTI might be a good option for them. It sounds like the apps and the books are also kind of effective, the shortened version. What was that called again? It wasn't CBTI. It was
BBTI.
BBTI.
There's so many technology based CBTI programs out there. You know, I can't possibly have reviewed all of them, but some of the most research supported ones, there's one called ShutEye, there's one called Sleepio, and then there's all kinds of workbooks out there. And these are very accessible and they're very similar. And it's like Weight Watchers in person or Weight Watchers online. You know, it's you're not dealing with a human, but you're getting the same components, and they've shown to be really effective.
All right. So, and then you also gave us some great tips to work on our sleep if we don't have an expert around. So thank you very much. Here's to good night's sleep for everybody listening. And thanks for caring about men's health, Kelly.
Thank you very much.
Paging Dr. Troy Madsen to Scope Studio for ER or Not.
All right. Time for another episode of ER or Not. That's where we will throw out a scenario. You decide whether or not it's a reason to go to the ER or not, and then Dr. Troy Madsen will give us a definitive answer. So today, very timely, you think you might have the coronavirus, also known as COVID-19. Is that a reason to go to the ER, ER or not?
So if you think you have the coronavirus, don't go to the ER. That's my number one piece of advice. Now, there is an exception to that. If you feel like you are having trouble breathing, if you can't get enough oxygen, if you're lightheaded, you're concerned about blood pressure issues. So these are the ABCs, airway, breathing, circulation. So if you're having those issues, absolutely go to the ER. But if you're not, and it's more like, hey, I've got a cough, I have a fever, I'm concerned I have coronavirus, the best thing to do is avoid the ER so you can leave those resources for the people who really need them right now. So the resource that's available for you, though, if you're concerned about coronavirus and you're not having those airway, breathing, circulation issues, is the university has in-car testing. So these are sites that are at various clinics across the Salt Lake Valley. You can go to these areas, you drive up there in your car, they do the test to tell you if you have coronavirus or not. Now, the testing results are going to take about 48 hours. Stay in self-quarantine, don't go out in public, don't expose other people, and then you'll get a call with your results. The recommendation I have is to call ahead. You can call a healthcare provider associated with these clinics. The number is 801-587-0712. And if you call that number, you'll talk to a healthcare provider. So again, that number is 801-587-0712 to talk to that healthcare provider and then get set up to go and get that in-car testing done through the university.
You would advise calling first before you go to the test site. Is that correct, Dr. Madsen?
I would. You can go to the test site and see a healthcare provider on site. I know I've heard some people have been frustrated because they've done that. And then the provider has said, you don't really meet criteria to get testing done. Just because these tests are limited, so they are limiting it to certain people who have certain symptoms. But the advantage of calling ahead is you've talked to someone, they're going to call and say, hey, this person's coming in. I've approved them to get this test done. It makes the process much smoother.
All right, it's time for odds and ends, getting you caught up on some of the things going on around the podcast. So before COVID-19 became a thing, we were going to do the Who Cares About Mitch's Health 5K, but that's a little up in the air because, you know, who knows how long this is going to go on. Mitch, give us a little update. Are you even still training or what's going on?
You betcha.
Listen to him. You betcha.
He's in. I love it.
I have, in the last couple of weeks, found how much I love running or just getting out, just doing something, because I am in this same room all day long and I'm sitting next to my partner. He's got a new bowler hat that he puts on when he doesn't want to be disturbed. We got this weird system going on. And just he does. It's his.
Yeah, hold on. We got to talk about that for a second.
There's more to this story. This is good.
I love it. I've heard of the talking stick. I've never heard of the leave me alone bowler hat.
Oh, yeah, it's the do not disturb bowler. And it's just if he puts it on, I'm supposed to be quiet. And
I'm getting one of those for Laura, because my wife now, Laura, is working from home. I'm getting her a bowler hat so she can put it on.
And the rule should be when they're wearing the do not disturb me bowler hat, they have to talk in a British accent if they are going to interact with you.
I like that rule a lot.
A really bad British accent.
But there's, I mean, I don't know what it was about before, being able to just go out all the time, but there's just something about being able to put on my shoes, and I listen to podcasts when I run, and there's just something about putting the headphones in and just leaving and just going into my own little space and not being in the same area, not, you know, just being, having a little bit of isolation of my own, like by myself out there has become kind of a place where I can go and de-stress every day. And so I'm still going to train for the 5K. I don't know if the 5K is going to happen, but I'm still using my couch to 5K. But just if anyone out there is getting a little stir crazy, everyone has a pair of shoes. Just go outside, just walk around, jog around, whatever you need to do, put in some headphones because you can still go outside. You just keep your distance. And it's been really cool as I'm out running and stuff. People are automatically like jumping to the other side of the sidewalk and things. Everyone's being very mindful and keeping physical distancing up. But everyone's out doing stuff. It's really quite nice.
So yeah, if you want to follow along with Mitch, maybe you want to start running on your own. You know, you reach out to him via Facebook and maybe connect, and maybe you guys can share running stories. Do you actually like the physical aspect of running? You talked a lot about just getting out.
I'm seeing improvement, but I don't know if I'm to that point where I go into a complete zen mode. My feet still kind of hurt when I'm running. I'm still getting used to it and warming up and still breathing ridiculously hard. I think that's the thing I'm working on the most, but it's getting there. I'm finding myself, I'm only supposed to run every other day according to the program, but I'm starting to do it every day. So
that's great.
It's different. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the whole Zen thing too, like I think I've said before, I don't know. It seems like more often than not, I'm getting ready to go run. I'm like, do I really want to do this? You know, even though I do it every day, but it's every time I get out, I, you know, generally once I get into it, I feel great. And the rule I always heard was never judge a run by the first mile or the second to last mile. So, you know, if you're only doing 2 miles, you're kind of not having great mileage anyway. So, you know, but I think over time, as you get more mileage, then you start to get in the groove a little more. But I think I agree. It's just so nice to get out right now and have that escape and see people out. I'm seeing lots of people out walking, running. It's so good to see that.
And I will say, when I first started running, I had, you know, my feet would hurt or my ankles would hurt or I'd get random little sore things. So that's just all part of the process. And I can tell you, as you continue to do that, that stuff goes away. Like I hear your stories and I hark right back to when I first started and I don't experience a lot of those things anymore. So, you know, stick with it. That will get better.
Yeah. And I was going to say too, I mean, what better time to train for a 5K than now? You've probably got more time on your hands and you're looking for an excuse to get out. And I think even if we're not in a position where we can get together and run a 5K, I think we do a virtual 5K and people run and send in their, you know, their tracker, whatever GPS device or whatever they have, and say, hey, we did it. You know, maybe we weren't all running around Sugar House Park together, but we did it. We did a 5K today. We made it happen.
I like that. I'm going to keep recording little episodes, little videos, I think, as I'm going on my runs, just my thoughts and kind of bits of encouragement, because I think that's what everyone kind of needs right now with the distancing.
All right. Well, I look forward to seeing those updates. And if you ever need any encouragement or, you know, want to talk about it, let me know. Okay, Mitch?
Absolutely.
Me too. Talk anytime. Like, we've all been through it and struggled to get going. And I, like I said, I still struggle most days to get out, but it's, there's so much reward in it.
Just going to leave this here. This is a moment where we might talk about something health related, or it just might be a random thought. I got to admit though, that on my mind lately has been my health. And I'm just going to leave this here. Health is worth something. It's something to value and care for. And it's moments like this when we have a health crisis, unlike I think any of us here at Who Cares About Men's Health has ever really experienced, that you come to appreciate your health and you start looking at, is it worth sacrificing for other things in your life, whether that's your pursuits at your job or, you know, just anything that would apply to you. And this has really made me realize that health is worth something. And of course, at this podcast, we believe that, but it's good to be reminded that it's a big deal.
It is a huge deal. I mean, health is wealth. It's such a cliche thing to say, but I often think about that, just how, you know, your health right now is your best defense against the coronavirus. Just being in good health, that is the absolute best defense. There's no medication that is going to be, I think, more defensive against the virus than having a good, healthy immune system and being in great health. So, you know, people would pay thousands or millions or whatever to have that sort of defense. So when you've got it, keep working on it. And if you don't, then I think do what you can to try and improve your health. Well, I'm going to leave this here, you know, totally changing subjects now. I'm finding myself now lately just kind of craving kind of older things. You know, I guess the one thing I've had on my mind is I want to buy an old typewriter. Do you own a typewriter, Scott?
No, I don't. My mom does though. Yeah. Still, she still uses it when she types up her envelopes to send me mail.
That's so cool. Yeah. My grandmother used to send me all these, you know, these typewritten notes on her old typewriter. These little things come out and hit the page, you know, like these old school typewriters. And I don't have one. I used to use like this old word processor thing back in high school. You would kind of see this stuff on this little screen. It wasn't really a computer per se, but I'm like craving like these old things. I want to find an old typewriter and buy it and just start typing stuff on it. I think that'd be cool.
What are you going to type? You going to write me a letter or something?
I'm going to start writing people letters. I don't use Facebook. You know, I don't, you know, we have our Men's Health podcast, but I don't have a Facebook. I'm just going to start typing letters on it and, you know, type thank you cards to people for gifts or whatever. I like to write handwritten thank you cards. I know that's kind of cheesy, but if someone sends me a gift, I like to send them a thank you card. So I want to get an old typewriter and start just typing stuff on it.
All right. Well, I'll keep my eye open for you and help
Please
you find
do.
One of those. Yeah.
Let me track one down.
It's time to say the things that we say at the end of podcasts because we're at the end of our podcast. Thank you very much for listening. If you want to reach out, you can do so at hello@thescoperadio.com. You can also check out our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/whocaresmenshealth. The website, whocaresmenshealth.com. Did I leave anything out, Troy?
Subscribe wherever you subscribe to podcasts. And thanks for listening and thanks for caring about men's health.